Welcome to episode 30 of Stories from the VO Booth. I'm your host, voiceover talent and trainer, Tina Zaremba. Today, I'm talking with my friend and voiceover talent, Christy Harst. Listen in as Christy shares how a college internship at a radio station led to her finding voiceovers, how she found her niche within voiceovers, medical narration, and methods she uses to tackle those crazy long medical words she's expected to read on a regular basis. So, without further ado, here's our chat. Christy Harst, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me today.
Absolutely. I'm very excited.
Me too. All right. I always ask, how did you find voiceovers? They don't talk about it at Career Day.
So I don't know if you got the memo, but back in like 94, that would be 1994. I know, it's a long time ago. I wanted to be the next Barbara Walters. So I wanted to be in broadcast communications and I was determined to do so. So I went to college and I decided I was going to get an internship every year. So my freshman year, I applied for a news internship at a local classical radio station.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So I got the interview. I went there and halfway through the interview, the owner of the station says, "You've got a nice voice. Come with me." And he took me to the studio and he handed me something like, I don't know, the Star Spangled Banner or the Pledge of Allegiance or something like that. He said, "Read this into the microphone." He recorded me. And then afterwards he goes, "You could do voiceovers." And I was like, "What the heck are voiceovers?" I had no clue. And it turns out by the end of that summer, he put me on air. He had me do a tag for a commercial and my parents drove like 45 minutes to get in radio range to hear it. And that was my first voiceover job ever, of course, unpaid.
I love it. Oh my God. That's fabulous though, that's how, you know, someone saw something in you or heard something in you and took that time.
Yeah, I was 19. And then of course, because I'm 19 and I'm stubborn, I just put it aside, like voiceovers, schmoiceovers, you know, whatever. And went on to try and pursue a broadcasting career.
And then what happened? Barbara Wawa didn't happen and you remembered voiceovers?
Yeah, Barbara didn't happen. I interned at MTV in New York my senior year in college. And it was at that point that I realized I didn't want to be in broadcasting. The stuff that I saw there, I was like, man, this is cutthroat. Like, I can't do this. And I wasn't willing to move to Podunk City, to Podunk City, to Podunk City and have little to no money. I just wasn't willing to do it. So I got a career in, I started a career in nonprofit, public relations and marketing. And then fast forward 10 or 12 years, I lost my job at the height of the economy. And I had been doing voiceover work and on-camera work on the side to my so-called professional career. Mm-hmm. And we just decided to do voiceover full-time. So we built a studio in our home, just decided to hit it hard.
So what areas do you mainly work in?
So right now, I do a lot of e-learning. I do a lot of medical narration. I do some explainers and a little sprinkling of commercials.
And I know you've developed a niche within voiceovers, medical narrations, which completely scares me. How did that come about? It freaks me out.
Actually, the first medical narration job was actually the longest one I'd ever had. And I auditioned through my agent. And the script had like maybe one, two difficult words in it. And I just looked it up and did my best. And I ended up getting the audition. I ended up getting the job. So I show up the first day to the studio and they handed me a book. It was like a 40 or 50 page document. And honestly, and I'm not joking because I said this to my husband when I came home the first day after I was there. It looked like a cat had walked across someone's keyboard. They pressed print and handed it to me. And I just kept looking at people like, are these words? These aren't words. This is a typo, comma, typo, comma, and typo. And they were like, no, it's not. And they actually were kind enough to have a medical professional there who was there to make sure that we were pronouncing these very difficult words correctly. And I was not prepared for this. I did not know the script was going to be like this. I thought it was going to be like what I auditioned for. Didn't know it was going to be so long. Didn't know it was going to look like a cat ran across the keyboard. I found myself sweating quite a bit. Like I could have changed my undergarments at least two times during the session.
No. Yeah.
Oh, I would be naked. I would have been, I would have been running out of there, actually. I would not, forget naked. I would have just run out. Like, what? Crazy.
Well, you know, when you're in that situation, they hired you. You have to make it work. They picked you for a reason. So I fought through it. And what was funny was I thought I sounded awful, but afterwards they were like, yeah, you sounded like you were a doctor. I was like, all right, then I am an actor, because that was some hard stuff. And then as I did that job a couple times a year, like 3 or 4 times a year for about 2.5 years. And the scripts were always that long. And I became acquainted with the words, and a lot of the words were always used in the script. So it became easier and easier. And one of the methods that I used, I used to play instruments growing up. I played 5 instruments growing up. And at one point I wrote my own music, and I treat the difficult word almost like a measure full of notes. I break it down phonetically, not the proper phonetics, but my phonetics. So I will figure out a rhythm or a beat to the word, and I break it up, and I'll do each note separately, and then I start to combine the notes, and I start to do them in a synchronized way, and then I'll take away the beat, like my snap of my finger when I'm talking in a beat, and then I add it to the sentence. I add the first 2 words that are in front of it and the last 2 words behind it, and I just keep adding and adding and adding until it becomes comfortable.
Wow. So is that one method you have to alleviate stress? Because I would feel so stressful, especially, like, I didn't realize you're in sessions. I thought you were recording these from your home studio, but you're going in.
The medical oncology piece that looked like a cat walked across the keyboard, that was in a studio with 2 people, the client and the medical professional, and then 1 other person, and then the audio engineer. So 4 people. And that's sweating bullets the first time. And then at home, you know, you have more liberty to obviously, because you're on your own time, to practice and research the words. And it's funny because when you asked me to do this podcast, you had also earlier, like a week before, I was getting a cold and you had recommended to me this medicine.
Oh, and I've been pronouncing it wrong, apparently. I thought it was Ocelycoxium.
By the way, it totally works. I love it.
I know.
But it is, and you kept on saying it, and it bugged me because I was like, how do you say this? How do you say it? I had to go look it up. And so I had to break it down in the exact same method that I just described to you. So I listened to a commercial that was about the homeopathic, what is it, drug? The homeopathic.
Uh-huh.
Medicine cure.
Yeah.
And
medicine cure. I know we're saying it.
Yeah. You know, whatever it is. And it's Ocelycoxium. Oh, no. Ocelycoxium. 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 So I just broke it down to Ocelia. Ocelia. Ocelycoxine. Ocelycoxium. Ocelycoxium. Basically, I try to break it down in my own way phonetically and then slowly combine it. And then I take away my beat or my rhythm. And that helps me a lot. And it also helps if you're trying to be as natural as possible. Like if you imagine saying what is your script or your audition, if you imagine saying it to your mother or your husband or your sister, like you're super sick and you really want to take this homeopathic stuff that's over the counter and you're trying to explain to your mother, look, mom, I've tried it. It's awesome. You really need to go buy some Ocelycoxium.
Okay, so question. When you're reading a medical narration script, one of the tools you have to keep it conversational is you'll take that keyword that is the medical jargon, you'll pull it out, and you'll use that in your natural, in a regular sentence that you may say.
Yeah, you just make up your own sentence. And in your mind, you're thinking, how could this be used if I'm talking to my mother, my sister, my father, my cousin? You know, make it personal and then go back and read it. And I think it helps. At least it helps me. It helps me a lot. And some of this material is super dry. And the reason they're hiring you is because you're a voice actor. They want you to bring life to the script because they don't want the people who are listening to be bored. They don't want them to just be snoozing off or fast forward. You know, there's a reason they're creating this program. There's a reason that they want their people to know, whether it be their employees or the general public or whoever, that they want to know this information. And it's funny, the piece I referenced earlier, the oncology piece that I did for a couple of years, they set it up Mission Impossible theme. So I actually had the Madame M character was a guy, and he was the one that would give me my assignments. And then I would report the assignments and what happened while I was out in the field. And and basically, I was just relaying information about the latest studies in oncology, the latest research, the latest test results. And they wanted to present it in a fun way and wanted it to be a little bit more conversational. And some of that stuff is hard to do, but that's your job, is to bring that to the script. And you can do that by, one of the ways I do it, obviously, is breaking down the word and then putting it in a sentence that wouldn't be in the script, that's personal, in a conversational way, and then I go back to the script. It's helped me, and it's easy for me to do now.
Yeah. You know, I don't do medical narration, but I've done some science training videos that also have some words where I'm like, I didn't even know that was a word.
Yeah.
So many syllables in there. You're like, oh, there's a vowel. But, I've done is I'll say the name of someone I know, like you, Christy, before the sentence. So at least almost like a trigger, and I'll take it out if I'm recording for my home studio.
Yeah.
Or I'll say a few things beforehand, you know, like a lead in to just try to ground it and land it somewhat, because, well, it helps if you have great writers who can make it conversational, like this Mission Impossible type piece that you did for the oncology. The piece that you did for the oncology script was, it sounds like the writers were creative, obviously, because they did the whole Mission Impossible theme, but sometimes it is really dry and it's challenging to make it conversational and not make it fake conversational. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
You can tell when it's fake conversational. It's like, ooh, you just wince when you hear it.
It's so forced. Yeah.
So how do you find work within the medical narration space?
I have found that it's very similar to the way I pursue commercial work. For example, I have been researching medical narration companies online and also via LinkedIn. Once I find them, I find some sort of contact information and introduce myself either via email or in an invitation to connect on LinkedIn. And I recently did some cold calling and I made about, I don't know, 3 or 5 phone calls in a day, which, by the way, for me is awesome. And
you're a full-time mom too. We need to add that in.
Oh, so. Yeah. Yeah. That might be important to add. Yeah.
Those two little ones.
I have a 3.5-year-old and a 5-year-old, and they require lots of chocolate and personal like devices, like, you know, an iPad or an iPhone so I can audition or do what I need to do. So yes, yes. So for me to do 3 to 5 phone calls is huge. So I don't, you know, yeah, it's huge. It's a big deal. So I called the first company, left a message, second company picked up, and I got 2 auditions that day.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So, I mean, it does that happen every time you call? No. But I spoke with the owner, I spoke with the producer, and got these 2 auditions, and now I'm on their roster of people that they send auditions to, which is great. I think there's not too much of a difference in the method in which you can pursue medical narration, but that's kind of what I've been doing, in addition to stuff from my agents.
You know, it just goes to show it's how much the industry has shifted, because it used to just be all from your agents, and now, no matter what market you're in, you have to put yourself out there and be seen. And so often in voiceovers, we're used to not being seen, but you really have to put yourself out there in order to stay relevant.
Yeah. And it's not easy. It's not easy at all. It's not easy to say, here, look at me. Look what I do. Yeah. But I also have found that I actually took a paragraph or two of that oncology, my cat walked across the keyboard script.
Yeah.
And just because to date, that's the most difficult thing I've ever done. Mm-hmm. And I recorded a snippet of it and had somebody put some music behind it for me and, you know, make it sound all fancy and shiny. And I'll attach that to an email. I will embed it
as an example.
As an example, because I think that, you know, that was a super difficult script. It was not easy. And the fact that I can say that I did that and people can hear it and hear what I bring to it is important, because you can say you do medical narration and that's something that you might want to do, but it's really helpful to have a sample of some difficult words that you can pronounce easily so that somebody can hear it. And I don't even necessarily think if you want to get into medical narration and you've never done one, that it has to be a sample of something you've done. You can go online, you can look at medical magazines, industry things, and find some snippets or paragraphs of something and record it and include it in an email or a link or something like that when you're trying to introduce yourself to potential clients.
Sending your a customized email with your a sample demo that's specific to medical narration, no matter what genre you choose to focus on, I think it's important to send a sample within that space. You know, like you're not sending your commercial demo to these people.
No, not at all. And I'm currently, in a couple of weeks, I'm going to be recording a whole narration demo. And within that narration demo, because I don't, at the time, presently, I am not able to record just a medical narration demo, just a e-learning demo, just this kind of demo. So I'm going to do various forms of narration within one demo. And it's kind of nice because even though I can't do individualized demos yet, I'm going to be able to pull from each of those in my demo. So I'll have the medical narration in my narration demo, and I'll have your classic narration, and I'll have this and that. And so not only will I be able to send the demo as a whole, but if I'm going after just medical narration, I'll just include that one snippet.
Yeah, very good. Cool. How can people find you, Christy, and learn more about you?
They can reach me at christyharst.com, and I'll spell that for you. It is C-H-R-I-S-T-Y, H-A-R, S as in Sam, and T as in Tom.com.
All right.
I said it with some sass. I wanted to make it last. Yes.
My last question for you. Maya Angelou says, words mean more than what is set down on paper. It takes the human voice to infuse them with deeper meaning. What do you hope your overall voice conveys in life and in work?
Okay, Barbara, are you trying to like go really super deep here? What's going on?
Oh, my goodness. Get out the Kleenex.
No. Get out the Kleenex, Barbara. I would say in life, I hope that my overall voice, not just my vocal cords, but just my voice as a person conveys compassion, warmth, and a sense of caring. And I would say that in work, I really want my voice to provide validity, a sense of fun and humor and personality, trustworthiness, and professionalism.
It does all of that and then some, my friend. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
Thanks for listening in. Stay tuned next week for episode 31, where I'm talking with West Coast talent Larry Hudson, and he's also the creator of VO Heaven, a place for VO actors to participate in VO workouts, learn about audio, and much more. And a reminder, if you haven't taken my free online 5-day VO challenge, go to tinazvotraining.com/challenge. Until next time, here's to owning our voices.